Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
This is Ruben Rivera.
This is John Seymour.
You're listening to New York, New York.
On Winner's Circle Media.
This is New York, New York. You tuned in. Your man John and Ruben. We got a special guest in the building today.
Hi, guys.
No, we're best.
Hold up. You already know that voice.
Maybe they don't know the voice.
Say it again.
I said, hi, guys. Maybe they don't know the voice. Hi.
You don't know the voice. You played yourself.
Hi, guys. My name is Laura Stiles. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, Laura Stiles in the building. What's good?
Nothing. You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I did, I was a guest on, it's The Real on their podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I did that with Flawless. And the only other podcast I ever go on and I frequent it is Juan Epstein. Are you guys familiar with Juan Epstein? It's one of my favorites. So this is technically my second guest appearance on a podcast.
Wow.
I usually don't do it.
Well, I hit Laura up and I said, yo, Laura, you want to do this podcast? And I realized, I was like, that would be like Laura asking me to go manage a restaurant tonight. Like a restaurant.
What did I tell you?
And she was like, but would you do it? I said, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Anything for Laura.
Anything for you guys. So I was like, all right, I'm here. What's up?
It's a pleasure to have you, man. This is awesome. Episode 3, right, John?
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah.
Wait, who was before me?
She's getting better. Well, we started off with the actor Leon.
Okay.
In the Bronx. And, you know, we played Shep in the movie with Tupac.
So mm-hmm.
That was interesting.
And then how do you guys feel about that?
About?
The Tupac movie. That's in the works.
He had a lot to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having a film background, I've always been a fan of Tupac's acting. I thought he was great. I thought he had so much potential. But, you know, sometimes, you know.
I'm a little nervous about it. Because I'm, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles. My teen years were in Los Angeles. I met Tupac twice, by the way.
Wow.
Let me tell you. Once at the Beverly Center, I was in the, going down the escalators. And I remember, like, opening, like, a candy bar and looking down, I'm like, oh my God, that's Tupac. And he had like a, he had no shirt and it was like typical like Tupac and he had like a bandana. And I remember, and he turned around and he smiled at me and he's like, what's up, shorty? And I was like, hi.
Wow. Was that?
That's
the,
it. That's all. That's it.
Was that his Suge Knight days or before that?
Yeah.
The underground days.
No. Suge Knight. Sure. Definitely Suge Knight days. Yeah.
The underground days, people didn't really know.
Yeah. And like, then
I met him.
I also met him. I was crossing the street, and I was leaving my high school, and God, I don't remember what year this is. And then he pulled up. You know, it was a red. Like a 65 Impala.
He's like, what up, shorty?
And then I said again, oh shit, it's Tupac. And then he's like, he just turned around and gave me like a big smile and like my heart was in my throat and like me and my friends just kept looking at each other like we couldn't believe it was him. So
Tupac is an icon, you know?
So I have those two little baby stories I'm proud of.
But the movie, right, so NWA just came out and that movie was dope.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I don't really know.
Although I hated the guy who portrayed Tupac in the movie. I thought it was corny. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I guess. Because they didn't really want to spend the money, probably. Because they were like, we're spending the money on NWA.
Other than that, I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool.
The dude who played Suge was good, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I thought they did a really good job on that. I don't know what the story is behind the Tupac movie as far as like, you know, if Afeni Shakur is involved in it.
Does that I don't happen? Think so.
Is that greenlit? The Tupac movie, is that going?
I mean, I heard.
I don't know. I know a lot of people have pulled out of it. And listen, yeah. I'm not here to shit on the Tupac movie. All I'm saying is that I've heard a lot of people pulled out.
Yeah, but it's been an ongoing struggle to try to get it done for
right.
the last 10 years.
Right. So it's just a story like Tupac's, I feel, should, you know, if it's going to be told, it needs to be told
right.
the right way.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing. I'm just nervous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm nervous about it because it's really important for the culture for it to be portrayed in a certain light. So.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like, though, nowadays, like, I think like maybe 10, 15 years ago, they would put out a corny movie. I think nowadays, like studios have a little bit of a better understanding that we can see through the bullshit a little bit.
I don't know if I agree with you on that.
I think television more is letting people do their things than film studios.
I'm scared of, like, you know, what was garbage that recently came out? Was it?
I can give you a list.
All those like Lifetime movies that came out. The Aaliyah one was garbage.
What I'm trying to say is that
people are putting out these stories. You know what I mean? So it's like, how dare you put out a garbage Aaliyah story? Like, that's insane to me. But, you know, all I'm saying is, like, look, if they put it out, I hope it's great. I want it to be great.
Yeah.
But I'm nervous.
Yeah. Well, it needs to be, like, big budget.
Yeah.
And told the right way. And
as long as Anthony Mackie doesn't play Tupac, I'm good.
I need that at that.
Boom!
See you later.
Yes. So what else is going on, guys?
This is the Sweet Trick brunch that we do. We have our guests in here. We have brunch with them. We just kick the ball around a little bit.
Well, I guess I'm having a liquid brunch.
Yeah, we're having liquid brunch today.
I'm good with the liquid brunch. I'm totally cool with that.
Yo, Laura, you know what's dope? I did a little bit of research on you. It's not stalking.
I don't think it's stalking either.
But I thought it was incredible for you to see your vision while you were out on the other coast.
Thank you.
And then to kind of, you know, go for yours and actually make something happen. And being from New York, I know how difficult it is to kind of find your place where you want to be. But for you to come here and be where you are today is pretty phenomenal, man. You want to tell us a little about the journey?
Yeah. Let me see. When I was living in Los Angeles, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, in mid-city Los Angeles, which is right next to South Central. So for those of you who don't know, it's like Pico Crenshaw area.
What gang were you from?
No gangs. No gangs. And then, let me tell you, I was very, very careful about those colors because it was real. I was not trying to get shot. That's why every time, like, when Crip walking became, like, part of, like, pop culture and I saw these little kids, like, just Crip walking. Are you kidding me? Yeah, like, that is something that was unheard of at a time and place where I literally would be in a party, and if I see people starting to Crip walk, I'm out of there with a quickness. Like, I've been at parties that were, like, drive-bys were, like, real. So to me, it's like, I don't even, like, to me, it's a sensitive subject to me still. But no, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and my dad lived in Hollywood. But Hollywood is more like the Hollywood, it's not the Hollywood that's today. It was really, like, I compare it to, like, Hell's Kitchen, like, in the late 80s, early 90s, where it was really drug-infested, and prostitution was real. A lot of child prostitution, too. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So I remember, like, I grew up walking to school, and, like, people trying to pick me up all the time. So, I say that because when I came to New York, a lot of people were like, you don't really seem like someone from L.A. to me, because you're really street smart and on it. But I feel like sometimes people from L.A. have this, like, weird stereotype, right? So there's a lot of people in L.A. that are, yes, they're superficial, and everybody wants to be an actor. The stories, you've seen it and heard it a thousand times, right? But if real people from real, like, L.A. have been through some real shit, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So they're really, like, you know, they're cut from a different cloth. So so when I was in LA, I was an art student, and I was going to performing arts high school, and I had a little boyfriend that I was, like, all in love with at the time, and he was like a spoken word artist, and he was a graffiti writer. So that's why, like, fast forward, like, when people tell me, like, how do you know all these, like, graph heads and, like, big guys that have blown up, like my man Retina, is like, I grew up with all of them, you know? That's how I know, like, even Terry and Mr. Brainwash. I used to work at a store when I was a kid, you know? So I wanted to be a DJ. So I wanted to be a DJ, and at the time, I'm first generation Latina, and my parents were like, what? That's not a real job. You need to go be a nurse. My dad's like, you should be, like, a secretary. I'm like, what? So it was a real, like, a battle between me and my parents about, like, where the direction of my career was going, right? So, you know, my parents were, like, in a really, they were in a really tough, like, their relationship was just on the rocks all the time. And my boyfriend at the time, who was kind of living with, he started selling drugs and started getting addicted. And the gang shit was getting, like, real, to the point where it was, like, I was getting run up on because of him. Yeah. And I knew that I just needed to get the hell out. I was like, yo, I need to get out of here. Because if I don't get out of here, I don't know if I'm going to last, right? So I remember taking a trip one summer. One of my best friends was from, her family lived in Long Island. She's like, yo, let's go to New York for like a week and go to Miami for like another week. And I was like, let's do it. So I came to New York and I was like, all right. I was like, yo, New York is dope.
That was your first time?
Yeah, first time. And I was like, yo, I think I could live here. So then I go to Miami and I was like, Miami's dope too, but it's too slow. Like, this is too slow. And it's like, all right, whatever. So I just made it a thing. I made some choices in my life where I was like, you know what? At the time, I was already scouting like radio because I wanted to be a DJ. I wanted to be on the radio. And I was like, man, like, I could really be on the radio. Like, I would listen to like DJs, like this woman named Nautica Dela Cruz. And I was like, wow, she sounds like someone I know and I could relate to her. So I started doing my research. And then I discovered Angie Martinez. I'm like, yo, she's so dope. She's like me. And if she could do it, I can do it too. And I was just convinced, like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be in radio. And you know what? I'm going to get the fuck out of L.A. And I'm going to move to New York. And I'm going to work for Hot 97 just like Angie did.
Wow.
So I said it. That was my goal. And that's it. So I remember one summer, I saved some money. And I saved, like, $1,500 cash in my pocket. And I bought one-way ticket and I came over here. And I never came, and I mean, I go back, but it took me a while. I was here for like maybe like 4 or 5 years before I went back to LA.
Yeah.
Because my dad stopped talking to me.
So you, when you were in New York, did you get a job at a radio station before you
got? No.
Oh,
what?
Really?
No.
Oh, shit.
When I got here, I was working, I worked everywhere. Like, I had like, I was working at like the Diesel store on 69th, on 59th and Lex.
Oh, no, I never saw you there. I never rocked Diesel.
Yeah, I worked at, I used to do.
I was about to say, yeah, I might have saw you there, but nah, I wasn't rocking Diesel.
I was seeing you in every Diesel.
I used to do their window displays.
All right.
And then I was in college. I was going to a city college. And then I was like, all right, how am I going to make this whole radio thing? How am I going to do it? So I was making calls and letting people know. And at the time, my homegirl that I was living next door to me was from Queens, right? And she was like, you know, since you're in New York, call my guy. His name is Camillo.
Oh,
he's an up-and-coming DJ, and he's so cool. Nice. Like, and I already had a bunch of his mixtapes. She's like, I'll tell him that you're coming, and he just got a job at Hot 97, so maybe you can help him out, right? So I'm calling Camilo, and Camilo's like, yeah, you can come to my club. I'm spinning at Cheetah. So I remember going.
Cheetah.
I remember going.
We didn't do Diesel, but we did
Cheetah. We didn't do Diesel.
I remember going to Cheetah and being like, yo, Camilo, let me intern for you. I'll carry your crates. I'll do whatever. And he was looking at me like, this fast-ass talking girl over here talking my ear off about this and this and hip-hop and this. And I would be digging through his stuff. And he was like, fam, chill. Like, I'll call you when I have something that you could possibly be a part of. So I was constantly like stalking him.
But that's what you gotta do.
And
to
then,
make it.
Yeah. I was always stalking him.
Look at Rube, he was stalking you earlier today.
I get my stalk on if I gotta do it.
No?
So it was like, but I didn't get my first like foot in the door through Camilo. I always kept my relationship with him, and I eventually got an internship from a friend working for Clear Channel here in New York, and Clear Channel decided to open up a brand new station called Power 105,
right,
which was set up to compete against Hot 97, because for a long time, Hot 97 is a heritage station, and they had no competition, you know? So it was like an old school hip hop station at the time, commercial free. So I was just lit. I was so happy to be there, and I literally went from getting, like, picking up phone calls, getting coffee, taking care of people's kids. Like, I did everything for other jocks at the time.
That's what people don't realize, right? So, like, this is an inspirational story, and this is, like, the type of shit that I love. But, you know, and today people want shit fast. They want it when they want it.
That's the
culture. You gotta grind, yo. You know what I'm saying? Well, like you listen to Laura Styles, you know, people see you on the gram and, you know, on the stage,
right,
Summer Jam, and you know, like, this shit didn't just happen overnight for Laura Styles. You know what I'm saying?
Laura Styles could have just bought a whole bunch of fake followers and be like, I made it. Just like
it was just like, you know, like she, you know, she knew somebody who got it. Nah, you were babysitting motherfucking people's kids.
I remember, dogs.
You would do whatever you could do.
I would be in the studio with, like, I used to work with Moni Love. She was one of the first ones.
Moni in the middle.
I had her baby while she was, like, running the boards. But I would look at her and I was like, wow, she's so awesome. Because she had her kids. She was, like, breastfeeding between commercials.
She's
and, like,
British, right? She came from London.
She still has a radio.
Yeah, she's still doing radio. Native
tongues. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Well, official. In the middle. That's she right. does radio in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful because it's like when I see her, it's like she just gives me like the illest hug. And I was like, yo, I'm so proud of you. So I worked with her and since I had nothing to do, I have no family here, I lived at the radio station. I think like when you wanna chase dreams, right, you have to live and breathe everything that has to do with it.
That's right.
And that's what I did. So I taught myself, I learned production and I learned how to like run the boards, and I would run boards for like Marley Marl and like Red Alert and Tony Touch. So they all saw me like grow.
Legends, yeah.
All the legends.
So who straight up put you on, say, gave you the first mic? Was it Ebro?
No, it wasn't Ebro.
So he was there already programming and
yes, right. But Hot 97 was super far-fetched to me at the time, right? Right? Yeah, because I felt like... Yeah, I was like, the doors to like Hot 97 never open. Like, no one leaves. Right. Who wants to quit? Well, that's like dream job. Bit.
But it's also like a female on the radio. Mm-hmm. Angie's over there, the voice of New York.
Uh-huh.
You know, she's a Latina, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're not letting you in.
Right, right. And I felt the same way, right? Yeah. So I was like, all right, whatever. I'm one step closer to my dreams being in New York City and just working in radio, right? So, and at the time, you know, I was able to witness some really special moments because, you know, when Nas and Jay-Z had their feud, like...
Yo, shout out to Nas.
Yeah, Nas, I remember Nas coming over to Power and, like, stating his biz and, like, just so many special moments.
At that time, it was just funny because mm-hmm. I tell the story a lot, and I've actually sat down with Nas and talked about it and just saying, like, what I remember hearing on the radio mm-hmm. when it happened. I was an electrician at the time. I was sitting, so while you were doing this, I was an electrician sitting in my van,
right.
You know, not going to work because I was like trying to
I'm standing in a corner and just watching people talk and listening and, you know, doing just being like a little fly on the wall during all of this and just being super excited to be able to witness history, you know?
That's an exciting time for sure.
So it was cool, you know, so it was really dope, but no. So fast forward, I worked with like Ed Lover, and Ed Lover always wanted like to help me.
You're just going icon, icon after icon.
I'm telling you, I've had a really like amazing career, and I've had amazing advice from so many like legends.
Yeah.
And so it's beautiful. I'm telling you, when I see them, and it's like they always give me the biggest warm embrace, and it's like just hearing them say like I'm so proud of you means the world to me.
Yes, of course.
So. Star and Buck Wild, you guys remember them?
Yeah.
Star and Buck Wild came over to Power 105 and they had the morning show. And
they had a pretty big moment there.
Oh my God, they were insane.
Yeah, but they were next level, those guys.
Insane. They were next level. If I could tell you some of the things that I witnessed,
some of the stuff I heard in the air was out of control. Star is crazy.
Insane. He's an incredibly smart man.
Yeah.
And, you know, he definitely pushes the envelope.
Oh, for sure.
And I'll tell you, I remember I became a producer for him. So he had a syndicated morning show. So that was my first taste of waking up at 4:30 in the morning like I do now, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a producer. So I was one of his producers. And let me tell you, that man ran the tightest ship. There was no being late. There was no fucking up. There was nothing.
Yeah.
So I just remember artists coming and being shook, like scared. Like, yo, what is he going to ask him? Like, just make sure you shake his hand, don't give him a dead fish, look him in the eye, and just be a straight shooter.
Can't wait to crush you.
So I was part of that movement, but, you know, Star said some things that got him fired.
Absolutely.
And while he was in the middle of that crazy lawsuit, people got fired and people got let go. So I basically was one of the only one who didn't get fired because I was employed by Clear Channel, but I was working, you know, the morning show. And I remember I hit a point in my life where I was like, all right, I've only been doing this for a couple of years. Like, I really want my own situation. I don't want to be a producer for anyone anymore. So I put together my what you call air check tapes for anybody who wants to be in radio. Air check is like a demo, your resume. And I was like, yo, here goes nothing. So I started putting like my packages together. I sent one to Miami. Our sister station at the time in Connecticut was called Power 104.1, and whoever else would take it. So mind you, when you have a career in radio, you have to be prepared to move, right?
Absolutely.
A lot of people start in small markets. Yeah, they'll start like in, I don't know, West Bubblefuck Nowhere, Huntsville, Alabama. No offense to anyone from Huntsville, Alabama.
Yeah, a great place.
But you know what I mean? Like, you have to start in a really small market and kind of blow up there and just kind of work your way up, right? So that's the traditional, like, journey for a jock. So I was like, all right, man, you know, finally I felt like I did something in New York, but I'm prepared to move, right? So I send my stuff to Miami, I get a call back. And I'm like, oh, shit, I got a call back from Miami. Then I get a call back from Connecticut. And I'm like, okay, so I can go to Miami, I can go to Connecticut. And then I get a call at from the station that Univision just put together, right? And at that time, Clear Channel had this, they were really investing in HD radio. So they had like a secondary station that was like a part of like it was called H2, whatever. And they were gonna do something called Power Latino. And all it was just music. And I came in and they were like, yo, can you voice the channel? We have this guy, Daddy Yankee. And he's a guy, he's kind of big in Puerto Rico. Like, come, why don't you voice the channel with him? Because I was the only one at Power that spoke Spanish, right? And I speak Spanish fluently. So I said, cool. So I did it. You know, at the time you say yes to everything. So I did it. I met Daddy Yankee and I was like, all right, cool. You know, whatever. Then I get a call and this guy, he's like, hey, you know, I work for Univision Radio in New York City. I've been looking for you. I saw that you did this, you voiced the Power Latino station for Power 105. I have a brand new station I just opened up here in New York City called La Calle. And he was like, I would love for you to come in for an interview. I'm really interested in you doing our middays. And I'm like, what?
And that's prime time, basically.
Prime time. Yeah, radio, yeah. Yeah, it's prime time. It's 10 to 2. It's like, right. You know.
That's where.
Office hours, yeah. That's it. And that means a full-time shift, and that means salary. So, you know, I was like, oh, my God, a real job? Yeah. I've been working at Diesel and then working at clubs and doing this 10,000 jobs just to make ends meet. So, you know, I was hyped. I was like, maybe insurance? You know? So I go. I you know, they love me. I you know, I had such a huge production background that I was basically a one-man band. They didn't need it. I didn't need any help. I was like, just take me into a studio. I was like, okay, I think this is how this works. And I already knew everything. So they were like, okay, cool, hired. So the only problem was it was a reggaeton station. You guys remember when reggaeton made a big fucking splash in New York? All right, well, I'm not Puerto Rican, and I don't know shit about reggaeton at the time.
I don't know if you know this. I know Ruben is definitely 100% Puerto Rican. I am 1/8 Puerto Rican.
I believe you. I believe you.
Yes.
I've seen your salsa moves, too.
Ah, yes.
We're gonna get to those salsa moves.
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm very honest. The station was playing reggaeton, reggae, soca, and hip hop. So I was like, I know everything else. I don't know reggaeton, but who cares? I speak Spanish and I'll figure it out, right? So I go in and I just learned the ropes, and I pretty much was teaching other people about programming at the time, and I ended up going in, and it was my first like time actually having like a billboard and being on like subways, and like wow. It was insane because it was like a complete 360
that's
for me.
Insane time in your life. For sure.
And what's special about it too is that a lot of certain artists like we started our careers at the same time. So like Pitbull, right? He came to my show, and it's like we had like a special moment because that's when he started really blowing up. And to this day, like when I see him, it's like a special love because he's like, I still remember the first time I came up to your show. I was baby. That's where I met Nina Sky. You know, they had like Oye Mi Canto and they had all their hits and they came to my show and we looked the same at the time. Yeah. So we just clicked and became, to this day, we're still really, really close.
By the way, Pitbull, not to go back, but he's one of the most intelligent artists I've ever
heard. Oh, he's so awesome.
That guy is, and then
he's a monster.
Then you see why he's where he is today.
And, yeah.
You know, I mean, that guy's a man. Now he's starting his film career.
Yeah.
You know, he's just phenomenal.
And people give him a lot of crap for, you know, he's like, oh, he's for going pop, but more power to him.
Yeah, exactly. That guy's lining his pockets
for
his children and his family for the rest of his life. And helping the community.
Yeah.
Crazy in Miami.
Yeah, so I spent some time working at that radio station for like 3 years. It was interesting. I was doing I was doing parties every night, like 6 days a week. Like literally I had like I was like a drug dealer. I had like a drawer and I would just throw cash in there from like my night gigs and just like go to work the next day, like just
like hosting gigs.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. So I just became like a really like a host, and I was doing it every single night. And Camilla would see me, he's like, yo, you're booked more DJs than I know, right?
Yeah.
And it was cool. That's how me and Camilo would start. Like he noticed me in the clubs and he was like, all right, dope. I want to work with you. And then he was like, you know, I have a crew called Heavy Hitters. So you should be a part of it. I'm like, what's in it for me? Right. So then he introduced me to DJ Enough. meaning of, we all became close. I became part of the crew. So then I would roll with them. So when they would get booked, like they do those Puerto Rico weekends, yeah. I would be a part of that. You know, I was smack on the flyer with them. Yeah. And it was ill because at the time there was no other like Latina or female really moving like that in that space, except like Angie was. But Angie was
Angie was a different thing.
She was putting out albums. Yeah. She was already like, you know, out of here. So she didn't have time to do these ratchet little parties, you know?
She should have never did State Property too. I'll say I'm gonna leave
that.
Oh
my gosh.
Wow. You gotta make the right choices in this
thing.
Yeah.
Just when you got that full time Univision
journey,
how many years had you been in New York grinding out all the part time stuff, all the hustle?
6 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like 6 years already, yes. I mean, when I tell you I put in groundwork, it was a lot of it. It was 6 years. And then also, too, it's really important because it was really important for me to be able to connect with my audience and people to believe you, to accept you. It's not easy in New York City, especially when you come from out of town.
So
it's probably the worst. Yeah. At that time, it was hard. That was very hard.
Yeah. And listen, I saw a lot of DJs from other places come in and out and get chewed up and spit out, people who didn't want to adapt to their surroundings. But I was lucky, like, people liked me, so it was cool, you know? I just really wanted to make sure that I was always, like, a functioning piece of the puzzle when it came to the culture, and I respected, you know, like, the OGs, and I did my research, and I worked really, really hard. So that whole thing was awesome, and I did that for, like, 3-4 years, and that was my first real introduction to, like, being on the air in New York City and starting to build like an audience where I would be out in the streets. And like, it was more about my voice because social media wasn't big back then, so people would recognize me. And then, you know, it was surreal to me that even people know who the fuck I was. Like, you know, hosting, I hosted Madison Square Garden on a 360 stage.
Wow, shit.
Like that to me, I was like the most surreal thing I've ever done in my life.
Next level.
You know what I mean? And it was like dreams, like it was like my dreams were coming true. And I did that until, like everything, the station ended up flipping, which means, like, they shut it down and it's another format comes in. And they were like, Laura, they fired everyone. Like, and they were like, Laura, you can stay because I was versatile and I could speak fluent Spanish, but we're gearing more, like, an older audience in top 40 Latin, but more tropical, which means like salsa and everything. And I was like, I can't do this. This is not, I don't live this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer, if you're not happy in what you do, like it's like you should.
It's not going to work out the way you like.
No, not at all. And I knew it wasn't for me, so I quit.
Yeah.
So I'm back where I started.
Not back at Diesel though, right?
No, back at Diesel, but I was close because I needed a job.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then I ended up working for like like some bootleg stations. There was a bootleg top 40 station that Star ended up like kind of being a part owner, or I'm not sure, because it was a kind of like a shady situation. I remember just getting paid in like brown paper bags. But I bounced around a little bit until I said, you know what? I don't want to do this Latin shit anymore. I want to go to hip hop. So I remember being like, I already had like a little bit of a buzz, and I remember telling Camilo like, yo, I think I want to go back to.
What era of hip hop was that at that time? Is that?
This had to be like 2000.
So that was like.
I want to say like.
Southern thing was happening.
Yeah.
Big jerseys and all that.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like 08 or 09. I'm so bad with dates.
XXX.
A lot of baggy jerseys.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Jersey era. That was Jersey era.
Yeah.
It was a weird time.
A lot of gold. I was going to say.
It was still weird because it was a lot of weird.
What was your best bad jersey?
I never wore jersey.
Never?
I never liked that style. I mean, I wore jerseys when I played ball. So, like, being a ball player, I never really thought that was cool.
I was a big jersey guy myself.
You play ball growing up in New York for real, you don't wear another man's jersey. I don't care if it's Larry Bird, Michael Jordan. I don't wear that. Anyway.
Wow. So then it's like, I remember having that conversation, like, yo, I want to go back to hip hop. Like, this was cool, but the whole time I was like, it's not really where my heart is at. So then,
reggaeton was blowing up, and you know what? It's like, that thing is still hot, right? I mean,
what? I've toured the world, okay? Like, doing parties, and it's like, I remember being like in Belgium, and I'm like, you know, Don Omar is doing that club. That club is like 7,000-8,000 people.
Yeah.
And I was like, and he's like, you know, he kills it out here. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
De La Ghetto, Arcángel, all of them. Yeah, that's my man too.
That's a good brother.
That's my guy.
Yo, you know who does it real strong? Winston and Yenny.
Yeah.
Those guys, they sell out arenas all over the world. Private jet, those guys.
Yeah, insane.
Insane.
Insane. So just because you don't hear it, you know, it's not as huge as it was like in the early 2000s doesn't mean that they're not killing it. And I love seeing them. Like, it just reminds me of a special time in my life, but they're rocking. Like it's always
still to
rocking.
This day, they are murdering the the culture's out of control all over the world.
Yeah, it makes me so happy. I love that.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then I was like, all right, so should I go back to Power 105 or do I want to go to Hot 97? I was like, I'm never gonna get hired at Hot 97. Like, no way. Like, they're not even for me.
Yes.
So, and then it was one of those things like where you're scared to meet your idol. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I was so scared to meet her because I was like, man, what if she's a bitch, it's gonna break my heart.
Yeah.
She's an asshole, she's gonna break my heart. And I remember being so hyped one time I was like on Twitter and she like tweeted me and I was like, I was like, she tweeted me, she knows who I am, you know? So it was cool. So then, and mind you, I'm close with Enough at the time, that's Big Papa to me, he still is.
Yeah.
And that's Angie and Enough rock for 20 years plus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I remember Enough being like, don't go to Power 105. Come to Hot 97, let's just see what we can do, right? So I'm like, okay, cool. So while I'm waiting to get this interview, the interview of my dreams, right? You know, it takes time. I had met Cypher Sounds through Me and the Sky. So Cypher was like, Laura, come be a guest on my show. He had a morning show on Sirius XM called The Cypher Sounds Effect, which was hilarious. Yeah. One of the best morning shows.
Dude.
Yeah.
Cypher's a very funny.
So whenever Angela Yee was doing that morning show with him at the time, so he's like, whenever Angela was out, I would come in to fill in, and I would have a blast with him.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, because, you know, at Sirius, you can say whatever you want.
Curse up a storm,
whatever. So then he was like, Laura, you're so funny. Like, you're so dope. You should, like, you need to be, come work with us. I'm like, I want to work with you. I don't know if they'll hire me.
Now, you know what's funny when I listen to it on the radio? Your laugh is, people talk about your laugh a lot.
Yeah.
Your laugh is like a laugh where somebody snaps on somebody and somebody in the back just starts, like, it's the best laugh.
I used to be so self-conscious. I was like, yo, I sound like a fucking Simpson.
No, your laugh is like, your laugh kind of just crushes the person more. Like,
it's so
it's awesome. I start dying. Wow,
but so then it was a thing where it's like I had all my boys rooting for me, but I still don't have this damn interview. So finally, I go, I get this interview, I meet Ebro, and Ebro's such a dick. And he's like,
really?
I meet him, and he's such a dick.
Damn, Ebro.
And I go in, and he's like, so what do you want from me? And I was like, well, you know, I would love to be a part of your station, this, that. He's like, well, I don't have any room for you. And in my head, I'm like, why the fuck am I here? You know what I mean? So this is like, I'm like, all right. So I'm here trying to pitch and sell myself and tell him everything. And he's looking at me. He's like, I don't have anything for you. I mean, we're opening up a digital department. Maybe you can do something there. And in my head, I'm like, digital department? What does that mean? He's like, you know, like YouTube and stuff. And I was like, and in my head, I was like, you have busted my ass for all these years to get on the air. And now you want me to
make YouTube videos?
YouTube interviews? Like, what is that? So I walked out of there, like, with my tail between my legs, like, super, like, sad. And I was like, fuck, man. All right. So I'm leaving, and Cypher and, like, Camilo and Enough were all like, so? And I was like, I don't think so, guys. So I leave, and I was faced with a decision because Power had offered me a real gig, right? Come work with us. You'll be on the air. Give me a time slot where you work at Hot. So finally, after just having different, you know, meetings with different people, I said, you know what? Sometimes in life, you got to take a few steps back to take that full leap into your dream job. And then I go back to Hot, and I was like, okay, I'll take it. So that was just the beginning of my career at Hot, and I ended up being inside in Angie's studio, because she met me, and she was like, yo, you're dope. She was like, come work for me. So she was like, by the way, guys, people in this room are snapping me or doing something to distract me, but I will not get distracted from my story. So anyway, I started working with Angie Martinez, and me and Angie Martinez developed an amazing relationship, and we're both very much alike, so we just clicked. And when Angie was out doing, like, Hollywood stuff and all these amazing things, she would be like, yo, hold down the show. So I would fill in for her, which was, like, a big deal for me at the time, because I'm like, I'm filling in for my idol. And she, let me tell you, Angie doesn't trust anyone. She didn't trust anyone. The only people who were allowed to fill in for her at the time were, like, celebrities. Like celebrities would come in and take your shit.
Like,
right.
Brooklyn, man.
And not for nothing, Angie Martinez, a Latin girl. She's like, you know,
from Brooklyn.
But she's the voice of New York.
Yep.
Now, you know, people are still people, and to have another girl fill in for you, who's another Latina girl, can be scary too. Just because she's who she is, you know, she must have really saw something in you to say, you know what, I'm going to allow her to kind of come in here and cover for me.
And I heard, I heard it everywhere. People would tell me the exact same thing. But me and her just developed a really special bond, and she just, not only is she like one of my mentors, she's such a good friend to me. Like, she would pull me to the side and be like, yo, you're fucking up. You know?
Yeah,
the way Angie does.
Yeah, but you know what?
Oh, she would be like, she would just give me this look whenever I did something good, and I'd be like, okay, God.
I met Angie a couple of times. Nice, and that she's good people.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's all right.
To this day, like, me and her are super close, you know? Which is important to me. It was very important to me. And then from then, things happened in radio, and Cypher had a show, and people got fired, and people got moved around, and I ended up getting my first morning show with Cypher and Rosenberg. That went for like about a year and a half, and then things shifted, and Cypher left. Ebro stepped in. And it's so funny how things are 360. Then it was me, Ebro, and Rosenberg, and we're still here.
Yeah, I know, and I listen to you all the time when I drive my kids to school. And
it's
my,
so
my
crazy.
My kids know Laura's voice.
It's so crazy because when I have like, and I meet like people on the street with their kids, and they tell me like, he's like, yo, you're like my every, you're my partner every morning on my way to work.
I had a super super newfound respect for your show and Ebro. And Rosenberg, mm-hmm. especially. After the situation with Drake and Funkmaster Flex, and I thought, you know, that's what New York is. That's what we've always been. We never, you know, I don't want to touch on that too much. I don't know. You don't want to speak on that too much. I understand.
Yeah, it's a little touchy.
It's touchy, you don't have to give me an opinion how you feel. I'm not even asking that. All I'm saying is, I respected Rosenberg for what he said, being a real New Yorker and understanding how this city used to be. But we had our chest out mm-hmm. back in the days, and now we're kind of like deflated.
Right.
I respect him on that. John, do you know he was like, you know, why would we fire anybody from our station for another guy from Toronto?
At the end of the day, that's insanity. That's what we're thinking.
Yeah, but
about.
That's the culture now.
But we even said like, it as a joke.
Still, like that's the thing. It's like, well, first of all, Flex is an icon in New York.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
He's a special guy.
A very special person.
Yeah.
Now Flex. You know, there's
you're just not the FDR, you're looking, the wheels are spinning.
Flex, I still listen to Flex. I love Flex. But sometimes, there's been many times in my life where I'm like, yo, Flex, just play the fucking song, Flex.
One more
just
ball.
Play the fucking song. But that's
drop
also part
ball.
Of, you know, what it is. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, Flex is, he's an icon.
How many years
in New York City?
5 years there?
God, yeah, it has to be like
for the ball.
And not for nothing. If you
they'll never be.
They'll town,
never be another Flex.
No, never. No way. Because they won't allow it. It's like it's just not.
I just don't think people are cut from these
blocks. But if you come
from
out of town and you're in the hip hop industry, you show fucking respect to Funkmaster Flex.
Yo, John
that's
is talking.
What it is.
John is talking that talk.
I'm just saying. It's a respect thing. Like, you know what happens is that in the park when you grew up, in the park that I grew up,
right.
You know, there was older dudes in the neighborhood, man, and you just showed them respect.
Nah, that's the
you know why? Thing. Because you get smacked the fuck up if you don't.
That's mm-hmm. right.
And some people maybe never hung out in those types of parks.
That's right.
You
so
know
they
what,
don't really
John?
Know what it is.
I feel like people should get smacked up a little bit more sometimes.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know that. But this is 2016.
Now you get sued, and now you go to court and can't smack people. I was a master at smacking people for years, man. I'm known for that.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I'm surrounded.
Yeah.
All right. Hold on.
Go on.
Ruben.
No, I'm not gonna.
You don't want to? Can you share just one smackaroo? Just give me one story. Just one.
Oh,
just
man.
Give me one. Just give me one. Give me one.
Thousands. I mean, you know, I did the door at a nightclub for years.
Right.
I've had to smack a bunch of.
So I know somebody had to come like too close to your face.
Oh, well, one time a dude spit on me.
Oof.
I wouldn't let
but
him.
Like, wait, what kind of spit? Like, he was talking to you and like just kind of like sprinkled in your face?
No.
Or he like hocked one up and was like,
he didn't hock it, but he did a nice, you know, a nice hearty spit and it kind of went, some of it went on my neck and my chin. And, you know, my immediate instinct was I just mopped him up right there. I just clocked him and his glasses broke. He went and stood across the street from the club and called the police. And I had to pay for his glasses, man, out of my check.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one out of millions.
I could imagine too, because you run in doors in downtown. It's like, I think people will look at you like, this is a good looking guy. Like, you're very like modelish. So they probably, so they probably looked at you like,
I got the $20 for you.
Yeah. But you understand, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people didn't know you from the Bronx, that you would have smacked the shit out of somebody. Nah, so you definitely got tested.
The word got around, that I'm out of the fight. And I'm not scared of, you know, you can tell me you're in the mob, I heard it all. I'm like, even more better.
Right.
I'd like to just, On that note, I'm undefeated.
I love these stories.
At the door, I'm undefeated. Nobody's never hit me.
How long on the court?
On the court, I took a couple of losses.
On the court, he might be defeated.
I played all over the world, I took a couple of losses. But at the door, I'm undefeated. Ain't nobody ever touched my face.
I know you're working the door very well.
I'm nice with my hands, yo.
John, would you like to share a smackaroo story?
I mean, you know.
I was there for a couple of hits.
Really?
He used to be the bartender at Stereo.
Stereo.
And I was
at I went to Stereo. You probably gave me a drink.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, probably. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
He was a Stereo. Yeah.
We worked together.
I Stereo up.
All right, hold on. Give me one. Just give me one.
At the bar, or you know, there's many. There's a few, right? Where like, you know, pool sticks have been involved and models and, you know, miscellaneous stuff.
John's Irish.
The thing is that John tries to hide. Hide a lot of this from me. I'm like, John, what?
You know, I'm a family man.
Of course.
I'm a wholesome guy.
You are.
How you doing?
I'm also sober. I'm also sober now, so there's stories you won't talk about.
John is in catalogs now. Oh, yeah. His beautiful family.
He's in home and country now.
Yes.
Children, yes. Speaking of that, though, I wanted to ask you one important question I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Was what's the wildest moment that you experienced? Because in the industry, I've been in shootouts, I've been at concerts with dudes just wild. I've seen it all in New York. Chasing music. Like, I used to chase music in the 80s.
Yeah.
And what's the wildest story, like, where you was actually scared? I mean, this is getting a little spooky. Like, maybe an artist's entourage or some shots got fired or somebody said something.
Yeah, of course.
Many times.
I have two. I have one. I was there when Cuban Links got sliced.
Yeah, Jimmy's, right?
At Jimmy's.
Yeah.
That was scary
as
hell.
That was crazy, man.
So I was there for that. But I have this one story that I was doing a party with. It was me, DJ Enough, Camilo, and it was Rick Ross. And it was in Washington Heights at this club called Umbrella.
Umbrella, that's right.
And it was like 2 in the morning. We got there and I was kind of roll with the guys, you know, because I was like, I used to have a bad habit of just rolling with my girls. And then sometimes guys can get a little aggressive, you know? So I was always like, I'm always like thinking I'm tougher than I really am. But when it comes to like certain men, it gets a little crazy. You know, I can hold my own, but then sometimes you just need somebody there with you, right? So Enough was like, especially when you do parties like this, you should come with us. So I said, okay. So I go, I roll with the guys, and I get to Umbrella. It was cool. And the way Umbrella was set up, it's high ceilings. They have umbrellas hanging from the ceilings, but it was nothing but a bunch of little stools. Because honestly, those uptown clubs, you already know, it's mostly just like all bottles. You know, it's bottle service and just standing around. It's not a real club, right? So mad drug dealers, it was one of those. And so I was there, and I remember Ross was there. He came. He was going to perform that night. It was so packed. And then all of a sudden, Ross gets on stage. I'm on the mic about to introduce him. And then all of a sudden, I see somebody throw a bottle out towards Ross, and it hits the stage. I jump off, right? I jump off stage. I don't even know where I threw the mic. And then one of Enough's cousins grabs me and throws me underneath a table. So I'm underneath the table, and then my friends get thrown underneath. I see one and another. And then when I tell you, I have never seen a fight so bad. Like stools flying over, bottles flying, like people flying. And then shots were fired. And I remember somebody sprayed mace. So I remember running into the girls' bathroom and being like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. So I grabbed like a bunch of paper towels and I wet them, and I was like, I gave them to the girls. I was like, put this over your face because there's mace, and like, follow me. And I just went through the back of the stage and out the door. But if I would have stayed there probably like, I don't know, like 10 more minutes, like we would have either gotten super sick off the mace because there was no windows, and then we were already like crying because it was so bad. I've never experienced anything like that. Like I really was like...
Or God forbid get shot.
Yeah, or get shot or get hit by one of those crazy tables or a bottle. Are you kidding me? Getting hit by a bottle?
Yeah.
So thank God I made it. But after that fight, they closed down that club.
Yeah.
It was bad, though. And I definitely remember some people were hurt, like, really bad. So I just
I actually hate that, man. I've been going through that all my life, man. You want to be part of the culture, but it's always some dumb shit pops off and people have no respect. And people are losers, basically, and ruin it for everybody.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
Anybody got a problem? I'll be a sweet chick. You're a loser. Putting people in danger.
I'll tell you what. Laura hosted our New Year's Eve party at Sweet Chick and introduced Noriega, and it was nothing but fun. And weed in the air, and everybody had a good time.
It was a wholesome time.
It was a very wholesome time,
right?
That's what we're doing.
You know, we had wholesome fun. Nobody was crip walking.
Yeah, no bottles flying.
No bottles flying.
No dingers.
No stools flying.
Nori had the line of the night when he said, "Yo, man, Sweet Chick, they get their motherfucking chicken from Jesus." And I was like, I couldn't believe he said that. It was hilarious. We had a great time.
He's so great, right? I love Nori.
Pure comedy.
Too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even realize how
his podcast is really
hilarious.
Funny.
It's hilarious. So let me tell you about this Nori podcast. Are we running out of time?
You're good.
Okay. So
what is it called again? Drink Champs. That's it.
So Nori is like a friend of the show, right? So he calls me whenever he wants. He texts me all the time because he listens to my show from Miami. He lives in Miami, so he listens on the app. And whenever something's going, he texts me like, "That was funny," or "That was foul," or he always has his 2 cents. So he comes to the show and he texts me like, "Lord, I want to come up. I want to have a new project," or whatever. I was like, "Of course," right? So I also produce my morning show, by the way. So it's like I deal with a lot of the publicists, the artists, sales, everything, right? My morning.
Really?
In the morning. So I pretty much I help. You know, I decide who's gonna make it on the show now. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Maybe you shouldn't have. Yeah. You're gonna be blowing up.
My phone's already on fire. But anyway. So I schedule him to come up, and he's like, "Laura, I want to do it different. Like, I want to interview you." So I was like, "Okay." So I was like, "Well, why don't you take Ebro's seat? Take that seat right there, and just let's see what he says when he comes in." So then Ebro comes and is like, "What the hell's going on?" I'm like, "Yo, Nori wants to take over the morning show," and like we love Nori, so we're like, "Of course."
A great personality.
So you could find that interview on YouTube. It's on Nori takes over Ebro in the morning. That's when he told us, "You know, I really want to do a podcast. I wish I could have my own show, my Nori in the morning." It was when we made it a thing. And right after, I guess somebody took it serious and decided to like team up with Nori and, you know, put the bug in his ear. And next thing you know, 1, 2, 3, he has a super successful podcast, which is hilarious.
He gets drunk during it. Just kills it.
Yeah.
It's just great.
I was in Miami. We had to go, me and Ebro went to Miami to interview Birdman. And he was like, "You're in Miami?" He's like, "Come through." But me and Ebro were like, "Fam, if we go do that podcast, we won't be able to do anything else that we have to do for work. Like, we're done." So we still have work to do. So maybe we should wait till the next time because you know he's going to murder us. Yo, but he's so awesome. And I'm so proud of him. Yo, it's so crazy. But yeah, guys, you know, that's it. And I can honestly say, like, I'm living my dream. I love my job. I hate the fact that I don't sleep enough. That's the only thing.
Yeah. I was going to ask you. I was going to say is that, like, I've been out with Laura late night, and I've hung out with Laura many different times, and Laura tells me about how she gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, "You're fucking, I don't know how you do it." I got kids that wake me up at, like, 7:30, and I'm like, "Fuck you, kids." Like, I want to go back to bed. Like, I can't, you know, I got mad shit to do during the day.
Yeah.
And I'm not even out of the club like that.
Yeah.
Know?
I remember one time, I think the family was in Trinidad, and I stopped by Sweet Chick.
Oh, when I was, oh.
So, so Sweet Chick is like our cheers, you know? Yeah. So I come in, I was like, "What are you doing tonight?" He's like, "Nothing. I don't have
no wife, no kids, I'm chilling."
So I said, "Okay, so we're hanging out?" And he's like, "Okay."
He'll do whatever.
So it was like me, him, and Ebro, and I forgot who was with us. I think my homegirl Rosie was with us, right? So we ended up, it was like my friend's party at so and so. So that night we ended up like going to like 3 spots. And at one of the parties, we ended up like dancing salsa.
It was like right at the end. It was like at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Like the club was closing down and they started playing the salsa music.
And I was like, "John, you have moves? Let's go." Let me tell you.
I used to hang out at Lantalis.
No, yeah, for real.
I used to hang out at Lantalis till like 10 a.m. on 116th Street,
man.
So, you know.
Don't sleep.
But the head whip, you know about the head whip.
So in the video, so one of my boys was in there, and he's like videotaping us dancing. So he sends it to me. He's like, I see you, right? And he sends me the video. So I'm dying because I get the video. And it's me and John dancing. John does this thing where he like turns me around and does this.
Oh, yeah. Like
this head whip. This head whip. Yo, I was crying. I'm like, John, are you a ballroom dancer on the lawn?
That's yo, shout out to my brother Val, yo. That shit was some like cross between like ballroom dancing and salsa dancing.
I was like, why you have moves?
I'm gonna preface. I used to hang at Latin Palace, but I was also getting very, very wasted at 10 a.m. in the morning. So I don't know if those are real salsa moves or just made up.
So funny. And then the next morning, like I FaceTime him, and he's like, he's like, how are you alive? I didn't even drink last night, and I feel hungover.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Remember? That's right. Yeah, she hit me, yo. I'm not even drinking.
Yeah,
and then we went to Bubby's. We ate, you know, we didn't get out of Bubby's probably like 5:30 in the morning, and I was destroyed. Fucking, I remember Rosie was like trying to climb the wall or some shit. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was a wild thing. Yeah,
like, yo, she hit me in the AM, and I was like, what? And I was walking my dog. But Laura looked exactly like how she looks right now. She looks like totally perfect. And I was like, what's wrong with you? Like, she's like the bionic woman, bro.
We're the same age.
I couldn't hang. So, and I know, you know, she works like maniac hours. It's insane. But you love what you do. And that's what's up.
I do. Listen, I'm surprised I don't look like Wednesday Addams because I don't get any sleep. Any sleep.
It's insane.
So I'm working on it.
Like,
the thing is,
when you can follow it,
I nap. I have to nap. Like when, like right now, I'm gonna go work out and then I'll go home and take like a 2-hour nap. I can't take more than like 2-3 tops, but that's it because then it ruins my night. But I'm a night owl, so I'm up to like midnight. At midnight,
like, you wasn't even hosting anything.
You know what it is? Was it like, you know what it is for real?
Yeah.
You know what it is? When you're doing something you love. And people always team no sleep, team this.
That's bullshit, okay?
That shit is bullshit. But when you're doing something you love, you're going to throw that nap in there, but you're going to keep going.
Yeah.
That's the difference between, you know what I mean, when you're doing something you really love.
And it's cool. And like radio has given me great opportunities. Like I've done voiceovers for like cartoons.
We've talked about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember you, I think you might have mentioned it to me, and I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is what you need to do. Like, I know. That's your next calling.
That's my dream. I want to be a cartoon.
Yo, that'd Laura's voice is so fucking ill. It's like...
So you know, I did a...
And you're going to do some acting soon.
I want to. Yes, yeah. I want to. So I did a... My friend gave me a script for like a... I don't even know. I'll show you the cartoon, but yeah. I know you know because you're a dad.
Yes.
He's like, can you play like a a baby bear?
Hell yeah.
And in my head, I was like, I think so. So I go in and I do the... And I do all the ad-libs. And it was a lot of like cooing and like, you know, and... The hardest part for me was slowing myself down, you know, and pacing myself. And, oh God, and Jesus, I can't sing for shit. So the singing part was a little rough for me. I really had to get coached, you know.
Yeah.
But it was cute, and I fell in love with it. I went in and I knocked it out. They were like, yo, you were so quick.
Yeah.
So I did my first cartoon, dubbing it in Spanish. I dubbed it in Spanish. And then I did, I went in and went for an audition for Rockstar Games, and I've been, I played two hookers
on
Grand Theft Auto. Right. Yeah, I did San Andreas.
That's great.
And I did the last one, and then I did, Grand Theft Auto has radio stations in it.
Right.
So when you go into the radio stations.
Yeah, they get in the car, they turn the stations.
So
right.
There's this one station called West Coast Radio.
Uh-huh.
So that's me. So I voiced that with the legendary DJ Pooh.
Yeah.
So I did that. So I did, and then I played a lawyer. I think I played two hookers, a lawyer. What else did I play? So just random characters.
I
want to
see you. I want to see Laura Stiles, and it's gonna happen. I want to see Laura Stiles in like a fucking Disney movie that I can go bring my kids to, and you be a little character.
That would be so ill.
I know it can happen.
I want to. So we'll see. I'm trying to explore more areas now because if I can, I want to do radio for as long as I can. But that's my next step. I definitely want to do more voiceover stuff and maybe a little acting. I'm not a thespian, but I just want to play characters that are not too far from myself. Like, I really want to be in Orange is the New Black. Is that bad?
No.
Wow, that was a great
I feel like
show.
I could play a great chola.
That would be fucking
you know? So, or whatever. You know, I'll take anything.
That stuff.
No. Yeah, but, you know.
I just want to be, like, when Ruben does his show, I want to just be, like, you know, white guy thug number 3.
That's what you want to do?
Yeah, like I want to be the guy in the background.
Ruben,
the butcher suit.
Put me in a bodega. I think I could work a bodega. I could make you a bacon, egg, and cheese.
Nah, we actually, you guys are definitely in our plan. So,
this is fun, guys.
Drug addict number two. I don't know if I want to be a hooker,
Ruben.
Nah, we're not gonna do that.
I don't know if I
want to
be a hooker.
You might be ordering 20 bricks.
You know what you can do? You can make me like the white guy who grew up in the Dominican neighborhood that can't even speak English. You know?
Tato.
They call me Blanco or some shit. You know what I'm saying? Blanco.
Yo, this was fun, guys.
This was dope, man.
Laura, thank you again.
Of course.
Coming through.
Of course.
Laura Styles, the iconic voice in New York City.
Well, iconic voice is a bit much, guys.
We're going to give you that.
Timeless.
We're
going to
give you that.
Iconic.
You know what is iconic? Those Khaled interviews. Oh. I just want to let you know that they started with us. You know that, right?
Oh, really?
Just know.
That's a major key.
This guy Khaled, it's really funny.
He's the best. Now it's like I'm kind of over it because
everybody's over it. But like
I love him though.
We kind of hosted the pre-VMA thing. He's just a funny dude.
You know what it is too is that I've seen him from the very beginning, and I just when I see one, it's like he's one of us. You know, who's like made it. It just makes me so proud.
I just want to ask Laura one more question that concerns me, and I'm sure it concerns John too. Mm-hmm. Just one question. Music, the direction. Do you think it's coming back to our city where it started? Do you think it's coming back to New York? Are more New York artists, or it's going to be a little bit time before anything like that happens?
I mean, it's weird because I heard
Nas' album's done, so I don't know.
I heard that too.
Yeah.
The
De La Soul just dropped.
De La Soul just
incredible album.
Pretty dope.
Very dope. So the only thing is that you know, with internet is kind of like blurred a lot of lines. So it's like. It's funny, I was having this conversation the other day. Nowadays, we come from a time where we demanded great music, right? Everything had to be produced a certain way, had to sound complete. Like, we were really hard on our artists.
And everything was different, nothing was just copycat.
So nowadays, it's like anybody, it's like a microwave era where anybody could just cop in and create like a little beat on Fruit Loops and like kind of record themselves sounding okay. And maybe the song has potential, but it's not even mixed properly, and they'll throw it on SoundCloud, and kids love it, so kids will share it, and it blows up. But it's not even a real song. But, you know, there's always the argument, right? There's artists like a Lil Yachty, you know what I mean? It's like, they're like, oh my God, he's trash.
But I think he's hilarious.
But how many times, and I say that, how many times growing up did our parents tell us that our music was trash?
Exactly. That's why I don't go there.
Yeah, I remember bumping Lil Kim Hardcore. And people were like, why are you in love with this woman that's so like
raunchy
and talking about X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
But to me, it was empowering because I was like, finally, a woman that's not scared, you know, to talk that talk. And I thought it was amazing. You know, I saw Lil Kim at that time as a feminist, and I thought she was like, but at the same time, I was bumping Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, and I was a huge Fugees fan just because what Lauryn meant for that group and for women in general. You know what I mean? Because Lauryn would eat everyone at the time.
Lyrically, she was a beast.
Yeah.
But I would say that I actually kind of go a little bit out of my way to force myself to listen to the shit that I might not listen to because I don't want to be that old guy.
Yeah.
There's some joints I like, new joints.
Of course. Some of these young artists are, like, have you heard Chance the Rapper?
The coloring book
is amazing. Anderson Paak, that Malibu album is bananas.
Anderson Paak.
Love Joey.
Joey's fan, but... You know, those guys are really doing like what to me I call hip hop.
Right.
And there's another genre, that's what it is, and it's everything's getting grouped into hip hop, and to me what it seems like is that hip hop is not what it was because there's a few different genres of it now.
Right.
And so like for me, I love like, you know, the new guys, I love that stuff, the Chance stuff, Anderson Paak is insane, genius actually I think. But and then there's, you know, Future and Yachty and these guys that are doing something different. It's not the same sound. So what are we calling that?
Design is huge, right?
Design is huge.
Yeah, and people can be. I remember.
And I fuck with it, but it's not hip hop to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not what I know as hip hop, but like,
because you compare it to the golden era and the albums that you fell in love with.
But I'm saying I'm putting Chance in the same category, even though his sound is different. It's an evolved sound of hip hop. But I think these guys, it's like a different thing. It's like evolved from something else. But
I respect it. I respect it because I feel like I told you, it's their generation. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I respect it. I remember playing designer for people, and I was like, what the fuck is this? This is bullshit, you know? And it's, you know, this kid is actually super talented.
And has the greatest personality I've ever seen. He's like
insane.
I saw designer perform at A-Life, and literally basically started the mosh pit with him.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was fucking fun as fuck.
Damn, why was I there? I would love to witness that.
It was like raining a little bit. Like, I'm like straight up throwing elbows at him, at people. It was like,
there's certain projects though that I feel like people need to embrace more though, right? Like, I just, you know what, Ruben? I was gonna send you this link. So Salam Remy calls me and he's like, "El, come to my office. I want to play something for you, right?" So I said, "Cool." I hadn't seen Salam in a while, and it's like Salam is like one of my favorite people ever. He gives me great career advice and just pushes me to be a better person. So Salam, I go see Salam, and he plays me this project. He's like, "You're gonna laugh, but this is a passion project of mine," right? He was like, "He's like, I want to bring back that real New York." Like Jimmy's era, right? So I started laughing. I'm like, okay. So he's like, I took Joel Ortiz, Bodega Bams, and he's like, and Nitty Scott, flew them to Miami to my studio, and we locked ourselves up in the studio for like 10 days. And I produced these records, and I want you to hear them. So as a group, it's called No Panty.
Wow.
So
it's,
okay? But when you hear the records, he has Hector Lavoe samples. Wow. He has like El Gran Combo. And it's so ill. Like when I heard the project, I was like, wow. And to hear them like lyrically push each other. And I mean, Nitty Scott is, I don't know if you're familiar with Nitty Scott, but no, she's but dope.
If Joel, yeah, I am actually.
I know Joel's with
Yeah.
I mean, but if Joel is in a room and pushing anybody for bars, I mean, that's the guy.
But he even sounds different on these tracks. Because Bodega Bams is dope too. Yeah, don't get it twisted.
I fuck with Bodega Bams. Yeah. I fuck with that first album. I was too
right.
Hot. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like all of them together. And this project is so awesome. So if you're looking for that New York sound, I want you to listen to his project. It's free. It's available on SoundCloud. Yeah. Ruben is awesome.
Crazy, right?
There's different to check it. That New York sound is here. It's available.
Of course. But people got to search for it and support it.
And stuff like that are doing their thing that are not getting played.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
You just got to support it.
I'm not mad at the music, man. I mean, some of it's kind of corny to me, I guess, because I'm a little older. But I'm not mad at the music. Like, I fuck with the music, man. The new music is dope.
Well, I put on the Lil Yachty album, right? I was walking from the train down here, and I said, I'm going to listen to this album, right? So I just really didn't hear any of the songs. And I listened to it, and I'm putting it on, and I'm walking, and I'm just zoning out. Next thing I know, like, I'm bopping down the street, though.
It's not bad.
I'm just doing this.
Yeah.
Like, you can't see me right now, but I'm doing this. I don't know what that is, but I was doing it while I was walking. And I wasn't even paying attention.
I wish somebody could see these moves right now.
Yeah, I was like, by the way, we just crushed it, thank you. Hotline blink.
Yeah, I was fucking blinging down the block. And, you know, I take it for what it is. Like,
me too.
Am I really going to listen to that? It's not really my thing, but I can fuck with it. I can fuck with it in the club, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I want to turn up when I'm in a club. I want to have fun. I don't want to have to be listening to, like, New York hip-hop where I'm, like, angry and shit. Or, like, you know, I want to fucking rob somebody. You know, that type of thing.
It's time and place.
Yeah.
Time and place.
But
you're shaving in the bathroom, you can throw punches in the mirror.
Yeah, you know? But,
okay, before we get out of here, what album were you listening to this morning? Or what were you listening to this morning?
I'm not going to lie to you. I was
Don't lie.
No, I'm going to keep it real. I was listening to Hector Lavoe this morning.
Okay.
I was listening to La Fama.
Uh-huh.
And I was listening to El Cantante too.
I love that.
I mean, that vibe is just...
By the way, I saw Mark Anthony at Radio City on Friday.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know, I love that man.
Yeah, he's great.
I think he's phenomenal. What were you listening to this morning?
I was listening to Frank Ocean.
Really? No, I love that too. I love Frank Ocean.
Honestly, that album is fucking great, I think.
Yeah. Do you like it better than Channel Orange and Nostalgia Ultra?
Honestly, I don't, I'm not a Frank Ocean fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't a Frank Ocean fan before this, to be honest with you. I think I knew some of it. Like, I don't think I listened to that whole album, his previous album, Channel Orange, or any of that. I just turned it on because I felt like turning it on recently, and I've been listening to it a lot.
You should.
It was very relaxing. My kids love it.
Yeah. You should listen to Nostalgia Ultra, though. To me, that's my favorite.
Andre's verse on it is crazy.
You know how happy that makes me? Do you know how much I love Outkast and Andre 3000? I heard that there's a finished Andre 3000 project.
Yeah, wow.
But he's not sure whether he wants to, how he wants to, like, execute the whole thing.
Well, that verse on the Frank Ocean album was amazing, right? And it really sparked a lot of talk. But I did hear that it was written 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And so,
before
we heard about
Travis
that,
Scott's Birds is out already, or are they holding it still?
No, it's out.
They let it out a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
Okay. I like Travis Scott as
Me
well.
Me too.
Yeah, he he got a good style.
But yeah, but the other day, what was I listening to? Like when I think about what I was listening to my headphones, I was listening to Nas-O-Matic. Sorry.
Come on.
Sorry.
I listen to that every day.
I'm always cute. I always like to ask people what they listen to this morning.
Yo. That's Rain another Day. Episode of New York, New York.
That was dope.
Shit, hold on a second. What? Sorry. I know this is the last. Hopefully somebody's still listening. But my man Rube, since the last time we had a podcast, became a father to my little nephew Kai,
aww,
aka little Carlito.
Little Carlito. You haven't announced it?
Nah, I mean, I put it on Instagram, but you know, it's my little man. Yo.
Congratulations, my brother.
My personal
congratulations. I told you, and he's gorgeous.
Thank you, man.
I left a little comment. I was like, your baby's beautiful.
He just stares at me, and I stare at him. We have staring contests all day. Because I can't believe it. I'm like, is it really happening? But it's an amazing experience, man. You know.
So dope.
Guys out there, wait. Wait till you're my age to have a kid. Do not have a kid in your 30s or 20s if you haven't had any at all yet. So. A
little fatherly advice.
Yeah, wait.
I like
it's
that.
Tough. Wait.
Guys,
thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Yo, thanks for coming.
Best.
Yo, invite me again. I want to continue this.
You're the best.
We kind of like a team. I'm good about that.
Yeah.
Listen, whenever you want. John, I already told you, whenever you want. Thank you.
Let's do it, guys. Peace.
Knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.